I groused, as I rummaged in the pantry for a can of coconut milk and a couple of protein shakes. My stomach was queasy, but I needed energy. During our time together in the Silvers, Shazam had often hunted for me, and I'd hacked the flanks off more animals than I could count, filleted and roasted them over a fire. I might seem a bit barbaric to the rest of the world. The world seems barbaric to me. I tossed back the coconut milk, followed by the protein shakes, wiped my mouth with the back of my hand, then turned to find Shazam standing, back arched like a horseshoe, porcupine bristles ridging his spine, lips drawn back in a silent snarl, as he stared down the long ebony-floored hallway that, after a right turn into a small foyer, led to the front door. Any time he does that, a chill ices my spine. He's never wrong. My Hellcat's hearing and sense of smell is more acute than mine. It's kept us alive on many occasions, both in Dublin and as we wandered hostile planets in the Silvers.
When he freezes, I freeze and prepare. Still, anything that might come through a door doesn't worry me over much. The truly dangerous things don't need doors.
Shazam tipped his regal shaggy head to look at me. Violet eyes lingered on my left arm, moved up to the shoulder, then to my face. Whiskers trembling, he whispered,
"It's changed again."
"Is something at the door?" I whispered back.
"Yes. Are you all right, Yee-Yee? Does it hurt?"
He fretted. I shook my head. Only the things I'd done with it hurt. My heart ached. A part of it would ache eternally for Bridget. I'd cut a good person's life short. Some people try to pay for their mistakes by punishing themselves. I don't. Not only doesn't it undo the mistake you made, it turns you into a non-productive liability. It makes everyone who has to put up with you miserable. The way I see it, if you screw up, you have two choices. Kill yourself, or try harder. His luminous eyes grew dewy.
"Make the black skin go away. Tell it to leave. It's hurting your heart, Yee-Yee."
I considered that, eyes darting back to the long hall leading to the door. Faint, but there. A wet snuffling, a scraping against the threshold. I considered my arm, the terrible power it held. The sword I needed to protect. The world I'd chosen to guard. Assuming it were possible, would I do it? Turn my back on power I might use for good if I could learn to control it? I didn't find what was happening to me a terrible thing. I found my lack of understanding and inability to control it the problem, one I intended to quickly remedy. Shazam knows me well. I'm unguarded around my quixotic, unconditionally loving friend, my normally shuttered gaze open, expressive.
"Oh, Yee-Yee,"
he whispered, tears filling his eyes.
"You wouldn't unchoose it if you could. You want it."
I did. I inclined my head and smiled faintly. He smiled back, albeit tearfully. It's strange to see Shazam smile. Thin lips peeling back from sharp fangs, curving up into his cheeks. It always reminds me of something, but it's proved an elusive memory. A volley of thuds hit the front door, and I heard it splinter with a thunderous crash. Shazam vanished, leaving me alone to face it. I rolled my eyes at the half-stripped bloody skull on the island. "Coward," I muttered, as I closed my fingers on the hilt of my sword and began to pad stealthily down the long hallway toward the door. 8. Demons dreaming. Breathe in. Breathe in. I'm coming back again. I've faced many monsters in my life, in Dublin and on countless worlds in the Silvers. I've battled on planets of endless night and scorching desert worlds with multiple suns. I survived by detaching from everything I know, think, and feel, and engaging fully in the fight. Some say I've done unspeakable things. I disagree. I've simply done things I don't like to speak about, and they wouldn't like to hear. I could hear it, down the hallway, around a corner, in the foyer near the guest bath, as if I ever had guests. But even without the labored panting of its breath that hitched infrequently on a chilling snake-like rattle, or the ponderous impact against the floor of whatever appendages on which it prowled, from the sound, my intruder weighed a good 400 to 500 pounds. I could feel it. It had presence. Massive, dark, and hungry. Not fey. Staggering power. Familiar in some way, yet not. I cocked my head and opened my senses, siphoning energy off that deep inner lake from which she-seers draw power. Those of us descended from the 6 ancient Irish houses, mutated eons ago by the addition of the Unseelie King's blood. But the vast, dark expanse had nothing to offer me. No rune, ward, or gift of foresight to help me discern what lay ahead. My hand itched relentlessly, as if allergic welts were sprouting beneath my skin. Gritting my teeth against the distraction, I began to pad forward again. A grunt was followed by a long, guttural groan and a wet snuffle. There was a dull thump, as if my enemy had stumbled against the wall. Good. A weakness. It was clumsy. Some of my most lethal foes had possessed enormous strength, but moved with such heaviness of limb, I danced around them as they died. I bent and drew a 6-inch military knife from my boot with my left hand, releasing the switchblade with a nearly inaudible snick. Since I hadn't blown up my bike when I'd grasped the handlebars on the way back to Dublin, I figured I was safe wielding a weapon. Apparently, I only blew up living things. Lovely. Still, I wasn't willing to put my sword in that dangerous hand, so I was going to be fighting handicapped. I eased the long, gleaming sword free with my right hand and crept forward again. There was another, softer grunt that ended in a slobbering sigh and sounded pained? Was my enemy already injured? Perfect. I could end it fast. I had more important things to do tonight. I knew my left arm was deadly, bare flesh to bare flesh, but I needed to know if, wrapped in layers of clothing, that killing touch was neutralized. If so, the solution was simple. Sleeve and glove up. I needed to hunt tonight, and not a blasted animal. I required a human to test my theory. Sounds of a heavy body moving on. I listened intently. 4 feet, followed by another thud, then the console table in my foyer crashing to the floor, taking vases and a crystal lamp with it. Followed by a long, shuddering groan of agony. A ragged exhale. Then silence. 2 possibilities. It was either a trick to lure me near, sucker me into believing my enemy wounded and helpless, or a massively powerful creature had, for reasons unknown, come to my flat to die and was going to wreck my furniture in the process. Sanctuary was the only flat I'd furnished myself, and the truest reflection of my taste. Bloody hell, as if there wasn't already enough blood in my kitchen to clean up. Often on distant worlds, I'd been so exhausted from prior battles, I'd learned not to rush into future ones. Waiting frequently yielded more information, or goaded an increasingly bored enemy into rash action. I leaned back against the wall and bided my time. 3 minutes passed, then 5. I could still feel its presence, but it hadn't made a single move. I listened to faint, irregular, shallow breaths and counted between them. The thing, whatever it was, breathed once every 2 minutes or so. By 10 minutes, I was bored out of my skull, and had decided it was definitely option 2. Something was dying, or dead, in my foyer, and I was growing increasingly chafed by the thought of it bleeding out on my floors, staining the grout, and probably soaking into my walls. I hate cleaning. It's something I can't do in the slipstream. I have to slow-mo Joe around my flats and dust and mop like everyone else. Blood on grout takes bleach and a scrub brush. Bleach on marble is a bad idea. Peeling away from the wall, I glided soundlessly forward. When I reached the corner, I inhaled deeply and ducked my head several feet lower, in case unfriendly fire was coming. Focused hard, isolating a single part of my body is difficult, If I'm not careful, I can sprain every tendon and ligament attached to that part. Put myself in freeze frame from the neck up, snatched a hasty look, and retreated. Then, rubbernecking wildly, I did a double take. "Oh, shit!" I exploded. An enormous black-skinned beast was collapsed on the floor of my foyer and, from the looks of it, was dying. It was one of the nine. I couldn't believe one of the immortals had finally surfaced in Dublin for the first time in years, and holy hell, I'd been crouching around the corner listening to him die. I scanned the creature for identifying features but found none. As beasts, I can't tell them apart. I'm not sure anyone could. Was this Varen's? Did that mean Mac was injured? Riordan, Lore, or one of the others? What was wrong with him? I approached with care. Before I'd met Shazam Silverside, I'd had to trap my own kills. I hate killing animals, but I had to eat. One night, I'd caught a beautiful llama-like creature in a trap I designed for a small boar. By the time I'd found it, it was mortally injured but still alive, and nearly insane with hunger, pain, and fear. I'd wept while I battled its great thrashing hooves to get close enough to slit its throat and end its suffering. The beast on the floor reminded me of that half-mad creature, tormented past endurance. I paused half a dozen paces away. He didn't weigh anywhere near the 400 to 500 pounds I'd thought. Perhaps he once had, but now his ribs were sharp-edged razors beneath a black hide. 9 feet tall, dangerously thin, sprawled on his side, stomach caved in, barely breathing, he weighed maybe 300 pounds. I thought he was heavier because it sounded like he'd been nearly collapsing with each step. His face was sharp-planed, primitive with a ridged forehead and a tangle of long dark hair. 3 sets of lethal horns flanked his enormous head, with the rear set curving toward his back. Deadly fangs as long as my fingers protruded from a mouth limned with spittle and foam. As I inched closer, he dragged his head from the floor to gaze at me. I froze. Burning crimson eyes with vertical pupils locked with mine, and I jerked from the sheer intensity of his gaze. When he unhinged impossibly large jaws and growled, revealing long, sharp fangs, I nearly inched backward, despite his weakened condition. Even dying, he saturated the foyer with fury, hunger, madness. I said, "I know you're one of the nine. You came to me for a reason. Let me help you." I could see no wounds on this side of his body. Would he roll over for me? Would he let me touch him? Was he strong enough to stop me if I tried? Holy composite, rational, perfect square numbers, one of the nine was finally back. Kaleidoscopic colors gushed back into my world again with the force of an unchecked fire hydrant. The beast growled again but tapered off to a whimpering moan as he dropped his head to the floor, with an audible crack of bone on tile. My eyes narrowed. 5 days in a cage. 5 days my mother didn't come home to feed me. I'd collapsed the same way. Although she'd wept as she finally fed me, her tears hadn't moved me like they used to. My hands fisted. I can't stand to see anyone starved, helpless. "I'll be back with food," I said, although I doubted he understood me. His gaze was dimming, his head lolled to the side, eyes closing. Then a single one snapped back open, and a flash of crimson fire tracked me as I left. Thanks to Shazam, my flats are amply stocked with meat. He hunts only once a day, but he's incessantly hungry, binge-eating like a bottomless black hole. I get him pig blood from the butcher on Parnell Street, keep some frozen, some thawed. That's another reason I don't have guests. The contents of my fridge are difficult to explain. I grabbed a container of blood and a package of ground beef, a bowl from one of the shelves, and dumped it together, then hurried back to the beast. He didn't move a muscle as I approached this time, so I placed the bowl near his head and waited for him to slide one of his massive appendages with long, cruel talons around the bowl. though his nostrils flared slightly, and he exhaled with a low rattling sound. He made no move for the food. He was too weak. Cursing whoever had done this to him, I scooped up a handful of the bloody meat and leaned in. My hand was inches from his face when I realized I was using my dominant, dangerous left hand, and yanked it back in horror. I dropped the food into the bowl, scraped meat off my palm, scrubbed the blood from my hand on my jeans, stuck my killing hand in my back pocket, then scooped again with my right. "Don't bite my hand off," I said sternly as I drizzled more blood on his muzzle. I'd seen what those deadly fangs could do in the heat of battle. I needed at least one good hand. He still didn't move. I'd just begun to contemplate how I might force apart his mandibles and feed him with only one hand when he twitched weakly and licked the blood with a long black tongue. I dropped the beef back into the bowl and scooped up only blood. He could barely lick. He certainly couldn't chew. I couldn't imagine the formidable strength of will he possessed to manage to shatter my door in his condition. I scooped and repeated again and again as he lapped weakly. By the tenth cupped handful of blood, he was licking with a whisper of animation, and a murmur of life flickered in his crimson eyes. By the 20th fistful, the bowl was empty, but the beast was deeply exhausted from his meager effort. Still, when he dropped his head to the floor this time, it met the tile more gently. "I'll be back with more," I promised, as I hurried back to the kitchen. 2 hours later, I'd rehung my door on its frame, fortifying it with drill, screws, and the addition of 2 leaves from the dining table that had never been used, and the beast was unconscious in my bed, a limp puddle of black skin and bones against a white-fitted sheet. I'd gotten 3 bowls of blood into him, and was going to have to head out to raid my other flats. The butcher wasn't open on Tuesdays, and breaking in would shatter the fragile trust we'd attained. He makes no effort to hide how disturbing he finds my frequent purchases, and I don't explain. I couldn't bear to leave the beast passed out in the foyer with his ribs jutting into the floor. So I hefted the unconscious creature onto a comforter and lugged him to my bedroom. Though starved, his hide was glossy black velvet, his body warm, and I felt a solid, though infrequent, pulse in his leg. I can lift a staggering amount of weight, but not even I can haul 9 feet of limp beast in an upward direction with a single hand. 2 hands would have been a breeze. So I dragged my mattress down to the floor and rolled the beast onto it. Then I tucked the comforter around his body, burning with questions. What was going on? What villain was powerful enough to capture one of the 9 and contain him? And why starve him to death? How had he escaped? I stared at him a long moment, releasing a pent breath I felt like I'd been holding for 2 long years. Then I inhaled a deep, enormous breath that felt like the first to fully expand my lungs for an equal amount of time. Sheep are social by nature. Deprived of sheep companionship, they'll flock with dogs, goats, cows, whatever's available. As will I. But this was my kind of company, and I was bloody well keeping it. There was no way he was dying on me. Sure, he'd come back, but where would he go? I highly doubted he'd return to me. The 9 are irritating like that. Master of their own sea, they chart their course and don't consult. I sleeved, gloved, and weaponed up, then glided out into the night, hoping to kill 2 birds with 1 stone before returning to sanctuary. 9. Chronic Town, Posters Torn, Reaping Wheel. Night in Dublin beyond the TBD, or Temple Bar District, is a graveyard. Solitary, eerie, and silent. No people walk these sidewalks. There's no blat of angry horns, no screech of tires in the streets. Few in Dublin have a car. Fewer still live on this side of the river, which lends the empty alleys and lanes the disturbingly surreal ambiance of an abandoned movie set. Most of the population clusters on the south side of the river, clinging to the normalcy of rebuilding the city and reporting to various jobs, as if they don't live in the midst of invaders with astronomical power that would delight in erasing us from the face of our own planet. Without Riordan and the rest of the Nine, who are feared even by the Fae, only I stand between the imperious, immortal Court of Seasons and what they want. Their desires are as bottomless as they are ancient, and I've been neutered by Mac. The Fae are blatantly contemptuous of mankind. They see us as puny and inconsequential, marching from birth to death in the blink of an eye. They slake their twisted desires in our world, with no one to fear. Not even me. For Mac, I've turned my back on them, forced myself to pretend they don't exist. I've never been inside Illyrium, not once. I watched it being built, hands fisted, jaw clenched, and did nothing. When queues of sheep spool around the blocks waiting to get in, I detour around them, don't spare them a glance. If I did, I'd be in trouble. I'd see their pending deaths, and my wires would get crossed, and sparks would fly, because that's what happens when my wires get crossed, and I'd end up starting a war all by myself. Knowing my luck, Mac would have just negotiated peace, and I'd be the one who blew it all. So, like a good little soldier who doesn't have a single ounce of meaningful backup, I fist my hands and Kevlar my heart and give it a wide berth. I focus my efforts on the differences I can make in this world while staying alive. Dead, I'm no good to anyone. I figured out a long time ago that if enough sifting Fae came after me, I could lose. If they've figured that out too, they've accepted my truce. Perhaps they also realize that if they killed me, Mac and many of the Nine would rain down hell on their race. We exist in a chilly, volatile détente. I choke on it some days. It takes me to a dark place. At night, I hunt with that darkness. But I know this fact. If Mac fails to gain the Light Court's loyalty, they will come for my sword. It's likely only a few weeks have passed in Faerie. Likely they're still playing nice with each other, feeling her out, trying to decide how much of the power the ancient queen passed her that she's figured out how to use and how far she's willing to take it. I know another fact, and holy hell, I'd like to talk to Mac about it. To govern a cruel race, one must be cruel. I hope Baron's rainbow girl can be cruel. It comes easier to me, but we weren't raised the same. Mac grew up drenched in love and approval, waltzing through rainbow-colored days. Objectively, I entertain the possibility that if the Fae killed me, she'd learn to be cruel instantly. You have to consider all the cards you have to play when the fate of your world is at stake. I spotted two of my three arsonists lurking in an alley on the north bank of the River Liffey, as I headed for another of my north side flats to get more blood for the beast. My body, an adrenaline-infused weapon, I glided silently near, a shadow on their heels, swiftly revising my plan into one that would take out three birds, not two, with a single stone tonight. Find out what they were up to. Test my theory about my arm on one of them and, if it still blew him up through my clothing, take the other as food for the beast. If their deeds were as villainous as I suspected, I'd kill them anyway. No point in wasting blood. I pegged the men as brothers, one a few inches taller than the other, moving with the same shambling gait, cut from identical genetic cloth with brown hair, the saggy, bloated skin of lifelong drinkers, mirror image blunt features, and shifty, cunning eyes behind glasses. I know those eyes. They're the eyes of frightened small men who serve a dark master to stay alive, taking delight in the torment of others because each obscene task they perform is a way of convincing themselves they're exempt. They chose to be predator, not prey. Was their master on the other side of that slim dark mirror? Might he be the him Oz had threatened me with? I'm not a predator.
nor am I prey. I'm the thing that crouches in the shadowy places between the two, native to no land but my own.
We can't go back empty-handed.
The shorter one sounded worried as he adjusted a slouchy rolled beanie on his head. I was an invisible wind on the salt-kissed breeze behind them, half into freeze frame, but not in the slipstream. I'd spent a lot of time analyzing how Raiden moved, and had achieved a degree of his ability to melt into his surroundings. It took intense mental effort. I had to keep myself partially in an alternate way of moving, and partially not. It was like compressing myself to fit in a doorway, making myself no wider than a few inches, but occasionally part of me popped on one side or the other if I was startled by something or lost focus. I'd been getting better at it, though, working with Fallon, our young chameleon, determined to learn from her.
Not tonight,
the other agreed with a curse.
It wants an even dozen. Told all of us to come back with no less. How the fuck are we supposed to manage that? We're not bloody miracle workers. He's got so many of us in this city, we're stepping all over each other's turf.
I assessed them, but discerned no sign of weapons. Perhaps they had a knife concealed somewhere. But most people didn't walk these streets without a gun. I had a Glock tucked in my waistband, my PPQ in an inside hip holster on my right.
Yeah, it's bullshit. My back still hurts from last night, and I swear I sprained my shoulder,
his companion complained.
Fucking fat-ass people. Where do they even find enough food to be fat?
His brother laughed, a thin, cruel sound, as he tipped a flask back and swigged.
No shit, right? Well, they don't stay that way long.
He guffawed again, but it died swiftly, and he shuddered, shoving the flask and his hands deep into the pockets of his coat. I narrowed my eyes, pondering that comment. They didn't stay fat. Was it possible whoever they worked for had been holding the beast in my flat? But what was the point in starving people and, or animals to death?
He needs to cut us some slack for it being so hard. They're afraid now and not going out at night. We took too many. He's got to let us move again,
the shorter of the two complained.
Never gonna happen, Alfie. Some bloody reason he wants us here. Fucking bastard. How's a man supposed to do his job with his hands tied? Fucking just like the world was before. Average guys like us is the ones doing all the hard work.
It went on like that for a while, as I tailed them, bitching about the world as if they were the good guys, badly abused by everyone, and how terrible it was they were being taken for granted and inconvenienced. I swallowed the bile of irritation so many times I was about to vomit it, when suddenly one of them whirled, and I felt a tiny piercing pain in my left breast, just above my nipple. I stiffened. The poison hit my blood instantly. 10. Honey, I'll rise up from the dead. I do it all the time. At least now I knew why they weren't carrying. Expectations. They trip you up every time. I'd scanned them for the usual human weapons, not some kind of tiny dart. I stared dazedly down at the dark 2-inch quill protruding from my left breast as I kicked up into the slipstream. I went down instead, crashing to the pavement on my knees, foaming at the mouth. My body was going numb. I couldn't even persuade my hand to reach for a gun. Bloody hell! They'd complained about weight. Was that because they were paralyzing and dragging people off somewhere? Were these men the reason so many adults had gone missing lately? The cause of the orphans in our city? Then they came back and bullied the children for the sheer nasty fun of it? But why did kids end up thinking Faye took their parents? These were average human men. My mouth worked, but nothing came out. I couldn't feel my breasts or my stomach. My hips were tingling, fading.
Stupid cunt, didn't think we knew you were back there.
The taller of the two tapped his beanie.
Fool ya!
He smirked, and leered down at me as the drug took effect.
Damn!
He raked a gaze over me.
Alfie, get a load of that sword.
Thick, grimy fingers clenched in anticipation. Alfie moved to join him.
What kind of woman carries it? Oh, shit, Callum. You know who we got ourselves here?
He laughed.
We caught us a bona fide vigilante. Bitch that keeps taking those kids, stealing our fun.
Callum's eyes narrowed, sharpening.
Well, we ain't taking her to him.
Lust has many faces. Some of them are ugly. I tried to push up from the pavement, but my arms were noodles. My legs beyond central nervous system control.
Nah, we'll take her to him after,
Alfie said.
We can't be wasting bodies like that. We don't want to end up on one of his other crews like the excavators.
He paled.
If there's enough of the bitch left to take,
Callum conceded.
But I'll get the sword. I hear it's got some kind of special powers.
He bent and tugged my sword from the sheath across my back, tucked it beneath his arm, then kicked me viciously in the ribs, shoving me from my fetal side curl onto my back. Then he patted me down and stripped both guns from my body, tucking them in his own waistband.
God damn,
he breathed, eyes narrowing further. He reached down and plucked the quill from my chest, then closed his hand on my breast and squeezed hard. I was screaming inside, frozen, unable to stop him or spew a single of the many threats on my tongue. The toxin they'd used had magical properties. It was taking me way too fast. My insane metabolism burns off normal toxins, and I'd bet it was given to them by whomever they worked for. But how had they seen me following them? He'd touched his beanie when he said he'd fooled me. Callum relinquished my breast with a sneer.
You want some of this, bitch?
He grabbed his crotch and laughed.
Don't worry, bitch. You're gonna get plenty. More than you know what to do with.
He turned and walked away, ordering over his shoulder.
Bring it, but don't damage the goods. Much. Let's get it off the street. Enjoy it somewhere nice and private, like.
Alfie whined.
Why do I always have to do all the work?
Grab my left hand. Grab my left hand, I willed silently.
'Cause you're the younger and stupider, that's why.
Grunting, Alfie turned, bent, and grabbed my right hand with his left and began dragging me down the sidewalk on my back. I employed one of Shazam's tricks, made myself heavier. I used to do it when I was a kid. I have no idea how it works. I just know it does. Cat's daughter Ray often does it to me, especially if I'm trying to pick her up to put her down for a nap. I needed him to grab my left hand too, see if my killing touch worked through fabric. He made it a dozen paces before snapping,
"Bugger, the bitch is heavy!"
He stopped, reached behind him, and grabbed my left hand with his right, and resumed trudging. My theory had been tested. Only bare skin to bare skin was deadly. One goal down.
Hey, Cal!
Alfie called excitedly to Callum.
Maybe she makes up for not getting more. We could say it took us all night to capture her because she's some kind of superhero. That'd give us plenty of time to have fun with her first.
Callum was silent a moment.
Dunno. Maybe if we add in the sword, but I ain't sure the bitch is worth giving it up. The fuck she ain't. Look at the tits on her. We don't get many like this. Bet she's red all over. Got the fire down below, you know? Jesus, you can see it in her eyes. Give him the sword and tell him it's got some kind of magic. Thought he'd want it more. You know he thinks we're stupid and eager to please. Come on, let's take her back to the arcade.
Another silence. Then Callum said,
but we bust ass and bag his dozen tomorrow. I don't want to get on his bad side. All he's got is bad sides. Hustle it. Spect I might take all night with this one. I get my turn,
Alfie protested.
You ain't the only one got needs. Your turn last about as long as your dick, while I blink once.
As they devolved into juvenile bickering about the size of their genitalia and speculative attributes of mine, all I could think was they'd done this before. How many of the people they'd abducted were women? How many paralyzed, helpless women had they raped? Callum and Alfie were going to die tonight. They dragged me 4 city blocks before Callum finally came back to help Alfie haul my boneless body up a steep flight of stairs into an abandoned office building that housed several businesses on the first floor. The back of my biker jacket was no doubt shredded, but I didn't think my back was. Yet. I had enough scars and was proud of each one, but scars from getting stupidly ambushed and being dragged were not something I wanted to sport. I'd been off my game, brooding in a corner of my mind about Bridget, worried about Shazam and the Beast in my flat. I'd been as stupid as my prey. I'd pondered 2 things while being dragged. Staring up at the clear, starlit skies, unable to close my eyes. Where exactly was the paralysis spell inside me, and how would events unfold? Would they undress me, or only the necessary parts? How far down my chest had the blackness beneath my skin spread? Would I blow them up if they touched my bare breast without my consent? I liked that thought. Problem was, it would only take care of one of them. The other might take my sword and vanish, leaving me lying there, paralyzed. As they half-walked, half-dragged me through a door into a retro 80s-style arcade, I searched deeper for the magic that had given my central nervous system orders to stop functioning properly. Spells that entered the bloodstream invariably latched onto some part of the brain, pressuring and reshaping it. But where was the bloody thing, and how did I neutralize it? I envisioned my brain, rummaging around in it, seeking an anomaly. I don't know if other people see their brains like I do. Perhaps years of confinement tortured me into forging pathways I'd never have developed otherwise. Perhaps whatever Rowena did to me made me different. Regardless, I have an acute, detailed awareness of what's inside my skull, and the ability to experience it with multiple senses. I have files and vaults, and I'm constantly moving things around, optimizing functionality. You have to take care of your brain. It's your greatest weapon. Aha, there. A shimmer of silver. A bead of possession. Nestled close to the pain center in my head. I've spent a lot of time working on that spot. When I used to hurt so bad from hunger, I'd mentally stuff soft, cushy pillows in my stomach to absorb the acid, and cocoon the pain center in my brain with cozy, warm comforters. It passed the time more tolerably.
Not too close to his fucking door,
Callum snapped.
Why? He never comes through. He ain't gonna leave. Hang on to her while I set things up. Gonna be at her a while.
Callum left Alfie supporting me crookedly while he rummaged audibly about in a part of the arcade beyond my ability to see, preparing a place to rape me. My eyes were unseeing anyway, turned inward as I teased at the small silvery knot, spiking tendrils of control into the complex membranes inside my skull, whispering commands to my body. It was powerful magic. Old magic. Old Earth God, I was willing to bet. Perhaps whipped up with a bit of sap from a sacred tree that no longer grew, blended with minerals found deep in the soil, ground with mortar and pestle to a thin vile poison enhanced by arcane arts. I had magic too. I envisioned a single black vein of the hunter residue beneath my skin, expanding across my collarbone, encouraged it to creep up my neck, where it glided effortlessly, almost eagerly, into my brain, meeting the silvery knot, seeping into it, and nullifying. Holy hell! My head jerked!
Jesus, Cal! She bloody jerked!
Alfie exploded, flinching.
No, she didn't,
Callum scoffed.
Nothing moves after a hit from one of those darts. Not until he says so. She did too,
Alfie insisted. I don't know what else was said then, because for a time, I simply wasn't there.
I was drifting in space, sailing between stars, tumbling head over heels through nebula-stained wormholes, gliding along the edges of gaseous rings and circling planets. A deep, hauntingly beautiful gonging resonated in the enormous vacuum of space around me. A technical impossibility. Vibrating into my soul, expanding outward to the stars, and the stars answered. Space was a living ocean, lapping gently at the stars, planets, suns, moons, and asteroids. The sound, the vision, was so exquisite. A part of me wept. It was heaven. It was peace. Nothing hurt. Nothing was wrong. Everything fit and made sense, and I could stay there forever, and nothing could ever touch me again. But, I thought, my, what was it that mattered to me? World. No peace for me. I thrust away the lovely vision and returned my attention to the silvery knot, cramming it full of Ode the Hunter. The spell holding me motionless shattered. I blessed the day I'd stabbed the hunter through the heart. It had somehow gifted me a stunning gargantuan power that I looked forward to exploring further, and learning to control. No more accidents.
I'm telling you, she moved.
Alfie was still arguing. I was lying on my back, on a wood pallet that bit into my spine. They'd relocated me while I drifted inside my head. Made us a bed of lumber and old magazines. I could smell the musty pages, old ink. Callum and Alfie towered over me. I slammed my hands to the floor behind my head, pushed off and vaulted to my feet in a sleek movement, startling them so badly, they stumbled backward, gaping at me, slack-jawed. "Wanna play, boys?" I purred with acid sweetness. "Because you definitely got me in a mood." 11. And you are not me. The lengths that I will go to.
"What the?"
Callum began. He never finished. Right hand around his throat, I crushed his windpipe and watched him die. Quick. A far more merciful death than he deserved. The kindness that separated me from him. I whirled and caught Alfie, the shorter of the two, by the back of his shirt, flung him across the room, slamming him into a wall so hard, it shuddered. Then I lunged for him, as he leapt for the narrow black opening a few feet to his right. This silver leading to that hot unknown realm was smaller, wider than the last. But the same acrid breeze gusted from it, smelling of wood smoke and blood. Like the last, this had no ornate frame or wide black border found on fey silvers. The mirrors they used for travel were something different. I snatched Alfie as he was about to plunge into the dark abyss, and hurled him back into the room. He crashed into a silent dark Pac-Man upright, shattered the frame, went skidding into a pinball machine, bounced off, and hit the floor. He pushed up, and tried to scramble away, but I kicked him in the side and dropped him back to the floor. "On your knees. Hands behind your head," I commanded. "Don't run again, or you're dead."
You're gonna kill me anyway,"
Alfie cried, clutching his ribs. "On your knees," I snarled.
"You killed my brother, you cunt."
"Last chance," I said softly, cramming more menace into a whisper than a shout.
"There's something wrong with you, bitch."
"You have no idea," I agreed.
"Fucking eyes of a psycho."
"You should talk. Knees, now." Trembling, casting furtive, wild-eyed glances at me, he clambered awkwardly, groaning loudly, to his hands and knees, then sat back on his heels, gasping as he placed his hands behind his head. I'd kicked him a little harder than I'd realized. His glasses were broken, askew on his nose, beany, drooping. The glasses were thick with heavy black frames, Thin silver wires were exposed by one broken flange. As he knelt, trembling with rage and fear, I caught a flash of something metallic in the dark folds of his cap and smiled faintly. Dancer might have created a similar gadget for me. Camera on your head. Your glasses tie into it. Gives you 180 vision.
Infrared,
he said sullenly. You saw my heat behind you.
He don't send us out without tools.
Who? Alfie's thin lips clamped together, his jaw jutted defiantly. Who do you work for, and what is he doing? Answer me or die. Still he said nothing. Answer me, or I'll shove your ass through that mirror with a message carved into it that says you spilled everything and I'm coming for him.
Fuck you, Will. You got no clue what you're messing with. You can't touch him. Nobody can. And you don't want to touch him. You don't want him to even look at you.
Who? I won't ask again.
What you gonna do?
He sneered.
You ain't gonna torture me. I know your kind. Stuck up, tight-ass vigilante. Saving worthless kids. Think you're above the rest of us. Think you're on the right side, but sweetheart, the right side is the winning side, and you ain't on it.
That he was right about part of what he'd said chafed. I needed information. Torture would get it. But I've always avoided crossing that murky line. I needed a sidekick that had no such problem. Still, a little pain wasn't torture. My switchblade flicked out with a small snick. Carve. Message. Choose. He glanced at his brother, dead on the floor, then behind me at the dark aperture in the brick wall. You won't make it, I said with an icy smile. You won't get past me. Brown eyes met mine. Fury burned in them, but was diluted by fear, tainted with a grim resignation. He was more afraid of his master than me. Alfie smiled coldly back.
Then I'll die trying.
He did. The mirror vanished the moment Alfie's heart stopped. Neat trick, that. Whatever master they served, he had formidable power. I felt the temperature in the room drop and spun instantly, but I was too late. The wall was brick. The portal closed. I kicked through faded popcorn sleeves and empty beer cans, scattering roaches, as I retrieved my sword and collected my guns, acknowledging I'd probably not have gone through it anyway. If their him was the same him Oz had referenced, delivering myself straight to his lair without a plan or backup, without anyone knowing where I was going, bordered on suicidal, and that's something I've never been. Still, I'd have liked time to inspect the glass. I searched both bodies, patting them down, stripping the cameras from their beanies, hooking the unbroken pair of glasses over the neckline of my shirt for later inspection. I tucked two thin metal cases, the size of wallets that contained a few dozen of their lethal quills, into my jacket. In an inner pocket of their coats, I found hideous Halloween masks and rubber skeleton gloves. Of course, children thought they were unseelie. In the dark of night, after the horrors the human race had witnessed, it was a fair assumption. My search yielded no other particularly useful information, but the evening had. I had much to mull over. Cull for clues, posit theories. Theories are a fluid roadmap for solving a mystery, and, if broached with an open mind and scrupulous attention to detail, they grant the answers you seek. At the moment, however, I had a cruelly starved member of the Nine in my bed that might already have some of those answers, and the blood in the corpses was cooling. Once a few weeks back, on a warm starlit evening, I'd walked the Temple Bar district, doing nothing but enjoying myself. I need to do that every now and then. Keeps me connected to my world. Within the confines of those protected streets, patrolled by the new guardians and, I suspected, warded by the Queen of the Fae herself,
Affording humans a safe haven where they might do more than merely survive, they could live. I forgot about my many responsibilities for a few hours. I tapped a foot along with street musicians. I stopped in pubs and danced with patrons. I threw darts with a hen party, intentionally missing a lot and gushing over the bride's picture of her dress, acutely aware my future would afford few occasions for beautiful dresses, and never a wedding gown. I sipped a Guinness and grabbed a bite to eat at my favourite fish house. Before leaving the seemingly spelled haven, I stared across the street, between passing boisterous partiers, through the glass pane of a restaurant, watching a family celebrate their daughter's birthday with a chocolate layer cake, my mouth watering. Chocolate is one of very few foods I have an emotional reaction to. I wondered what it would be like to have that kind of life. I couldn't fathom it. I'm wired differently. I wouldn't be able to enjoy it. I'd be incessantly scanning my environment, knowing someone was out there in need, and I was eating cake. Situational awareness is instinctive for me. I can't override it. Back in my apartment, I leaned against the wall in the foyer, stretched my legs long and crossed them at the ankles, watching the beast eat the bodies I'd hauled up four flights of stairs, because the elevator in my building was on the blink again and, since no one actually lived here, I'd have to figure out how to fix it myself. I'd dragged the deeply exhausted creature out into the foyer on my comforter to feed him there. No blood, no gristle, no guts in my bed is an unbreakable rule. The beast roused the moment he smelled the bodies, making quick work of one before moving to the next. I stopped watching and stared out the bank of tall windows, mulling the day's events. When at last the beast rolled back onto the comforter, which was now bloody, and meant I would have to do my version of shopping again, since no amount of bleach ever gets all the bloodstains out, I tugged him back to my bed and cleaned up the mess that remained on the foyer floor, then sanitized the kitchen of the remains of Shazam's feast, thinking about chocolate cake the entire time. Later, I stood in my bedroom with the slumbering beast and stripped, inspecting my clothes. The back of my jacket was destroyed, and the butt of my jeans worn so thin I'd split them if I wore them again, so I tossed both in the trash. I don't shower multiple times a day unless I'm covered with blood that doesn't come off with my clothing, but sometimes I feel a need to rinse a more intangible filth from my body. After I dried my hair, I inspected myself in the mirror. The blackness of my skin was static with a small exception. A single obsidian vein trellised the left side of my neck and disappeared beneath my curls. "Well, damn," I muttered as I pulled a long-sleeved, close-fitting black shirt over my head. I tugged on the same nylon glove that had served as protection for my lethal touch earlier while pondering what to do about my neck. I couldn't think of any reason someone might touch that 6-inch expanse of my skin. And I despise turtlenecks. They make me feel like I'm choking. Still, I had no guarantee that... Bloody hell, Ray always flung her arms around my neck. I considered the thinness of the fabric of my glove, a silky, nearly transparent nylon, then rummaged in the vanity drawer, retrieved a roll of duct tape. Don't ask why I have it in my bathroom. My life is strange. And taped the side of my neck, deciding as thick as my hair was, it would protect anyone who touched my head. I tugged on a pair of faded sweatpants and draped a well-worn quilt over the enormous sleeping beast. After a moment's deliberation, I shrugged and curled up on the small amount of available mattress to catch a few hours of sleep, sword at my side. I dreamed of being helpless, in a cage, and knew even in the dreaming the sensation of being paralyzed, about to be raped by those despicable trolls, had triggered a difficult memory I keep locked in one of my highest security vaults. I dreamed I really did pick up Ray at the Abbey, and the lovely child exploded in my arms. Little girls are meant to be cherished, protected, and raised into powerful young women. Something inside me died with her, and my heart turned to a dark, ugly bit of useless stone. I dreamed I stood at Bridget's grave, weeping blood while black shadows rose from the earth. Then something was behind me, and it was going to starve me worse than I'd ever starved in my cage. And whatever the thing was, it wanted me to say its name over and over, but I didn't know its name. I dreamed of the night, years ago, when Mac came to the Abbey, insisting she hadn't meant to stab the she-seer who'd attacked her, but the spear was in her hand, and the woman lunged, and they'd met in lethal fashion. When she moved through the cluster of women and hugged me, I could feel her, smell the scent of shampoo on her hair. Life is an unavoidable accumulation of transgressions. None of us are exempt. Let them go, and work harder to make miracles. She whispered against my ear, kissed my hair, and vanished. I dreamed my left forearm sprouted darkly beautiful obsidian thorns. So many, it became a black-studded opera glove, lethal to the touch. Then it spread, consuming me, and I became lethal to touch. Isolated by my own skin, never again to be held or hugged or permitted any physical contact at all. I dreamed the beast in my bed licked my shoulder, the nape of my neck. That might have been real. I didn't feel teeth, so I didn't worry about it. I dreamed Riordan was bending over me, etching symbols on my forehead, my cheeks, my chest, murmuring,
"Crown Zero, woman, let it go, let it go. See only beauty, know only joy."
Then I dreamed the infinite, dazzling nightscape I'd traveled when I embraced the power inside me. Nebula-stained, nova-kissed, I drifted, eyes wide with awe and wonder, among the stars. 12. A dark, divine intervention. You are a shining light. Kat sipped her tea as she waited for the others to join her in the parlor. The pheasant room was one of her favorites at the Abbey, furnished with lovely, century-old black and cream velvet sofas, white ottomans embroidered with black Celtic knot patterns, gleaming black side tables, and curio cabinets of zebra ebony. Faded gray and ivory Persian rugs covered the floors. Burgundy pillows and throws dotted the chairs. But it was the south wall, of floor-to-ceiling windows opening onto the meditation garden, that made the expansive room one of her favorites. The room had drawn its name from the silk wall covering of tan and gray pheasants on an ivory background that stretched from wainscoting to acanthus-embellished crown molding. In Rowena's day, the heavy, dark, dusty drapes had been eternally drawn, protecting, or hiding, as she'd hidden everything of value, their cherished heritage from the sun and prying eyes. No more. Both the sun and the lovely illuminating rays of the moon would, by God, shine in this abbey. If Kat herself had to shred every bloody drape in the place, there would be no darkness, no secrets within these walls. Well, perhaps a few. Sean had found a man who could do a paternity test once the child was born. How he'd located him, she had no idea. Those with medical training of any kind were in high demand and short supply. Kat had been heavy with child at the time. "You think I've been unfaithful," she'd said. She had. Not willingly, but she had. "Have you?" he countered. "We were taking precautions." Indeed they were, unready to bring a child into an uncertain world.
"Do you love me?" she asked quietly.
"Oh, and you know I do. Whatever, wherever I am, it's you, always and only."
"Then how could it matter? If I pledge my fidelity to you for the rest of our lives."
"Are you willing to, Kat?"
"Aye." He'd been an Unseelie prince by then. wings forming on that dark, beautiful back she so adored, running her hands down. He'd been half mad at times, from pain, tortured by fear that the twisted magic of the unseen